Hello everyone and welcome to JFG Tonight. Second attempt again. Why on a streaming platform do we have to reset the stream twice per night so that it works? Anyways, at this point I'm capable of solving it in 2 minutes. Not so bad, but how is it that every time I start the show normally, there's no sound? Why do you do this, Odyssey? Anyways, tonight is a double program. We will have our debate about capitalism and communism on Modern Day Debate at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And yesterday was also a double program. We had the Patreon hangout. For those who missed it, it's worth subscribing to the $20 level on Patreon or Subscribestar, because normally it's a collective discussion with 7-8 people joining. But yesterday there was only one person speaking mostly, and he took us through his anxieties in life and his fear of being caught by cancel culture. And at this point, I mean, we're at the point where cancel culture is pathological. It has pathological effects on people, and he basically had PTSD from being attacked by people in his personal life. And so it was very interesting, and I'm sure it could be informative for a lot of people. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Today I will be reviewing 2000 Muse. However, one event that someone talked about yesterday, I didn't know it was that bad. Luna, Terra to USD. Look at the price drop. Lost 95% of its value within the last few hours, days. It was in March, it was at $120, and now it is at $1. Imagine you've invested I don't know, $1,200, and you find yourself only with $100 left. You've lost everything you had. If you have invested more and you put everything in there, you would have lost most of what you have. Unbelievable. Fractalman says the arbitrage worked, though. Well, those are risky decisions to make. I don't know enough about the technicalities of Luna to determine if these arbitrage mechanism will work or if you can get rug pull on this too. But it's a terrible event for those who had this cryptocurrency. I didn't. I never heard about this cryptocurrency. It's a South Korean crypto. Yan Malchung was publishing that the Luna subreddit is on literal suicide watch. For everyone panicking, here are some national helpline numbers. For those considering suicide, here's my story of attempted suicide. My ex-colleague attempted suicide. My friends and ex-colleague, my manager for 15 years, tried to commit suicide this morning. He basically moved all of his savings to crypto in 2021, and Luna was a massive player in his portfolio. Just wanted to tell you guys, if you feel pain and you think your life is miserable without money, you feel failure and stuff, just come to people you love. Do not be alone. This shit is getting serious. I lost over 450k USD. I cannot pay the bank. I will lose my home soon. I'll become homeless. Suicide is the only way out for me. Messages of desperation on Reddit. I'm sorry to say this, but it's over, boys. You know, when someone has a dear relative that is on life support, they refuse to believe that their loved one is gonna make it, even though the doctors are telling them that they're not gonna make it. Well, that's an accurate representation of what's going on with Luna. I am the doctor that is telling you that your beloved project is not going to make it. It's time to pull the plug, which represents selling your remaining capital and let go so you can grieve your loss and move on with life. I'm very sorry for your loss. Wow. Those are testimonies of despair. I'm sorry for those who had Luna, but this is what's going to happen. So if you're on some of these weird cryptos out there that are kind of on the side, alternative cryptos, be careful with this. Personally, I keep a little bit of Hex, and I know that X could fall to zero and it wouldn't change my life. So it's the only crypto that I keep outside of BTC and ETH. X, because it's been having extremely good performance, and so the initial amount of money was ridiculously low that I've put in it, and so I don't mind if it goes to zero. But please make sure that if you own anything else than BTC or ETH, make sure that you're ready for it to go to zero and that you're willing to hold for 4 years if you need to eventually recover its value, because that's the nature of the crypto world. What went wrong with Luna? Apparently, a bunch of big whales have accumulated UST. So UST was the stable coin on the Luna blockchain, but it was operating, it was stabilizing its value with respect to the US dollar through the value of Luna, of Terra. So the problem is, there are plays that you can do that crash the two or crash one of them and favor another one. When you have an automated smart contract that adjusts the number of UST you have in your wallet in an intelligent way so as to peg the value to the US dollar, but your pegging of the value to the US dollar is ultimately linked to traffic on the Luna blockchain and to the value of Terra itself. Now, you had a couple of clever players, it seems, who have accumulated a lot of UST, and they started selling it massively on the exchanges. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars worth of UST. They sold on the exchanges Curve, Binance, Anchor, and other platforms. And while they were selling this, they were also shorting Luna. So there was massive pressure on the price of UST to go down, and they basically made a play on the smart contract of UST. I think this event probably puts into question those mechanisms for pegging the value of stable coins and whether they are exploitable. I think what we have here is a clever exploit of a smart contract feature of a stable coin. Thomas Howard says there is a fairly well-informed theory that international financial interest made a direct play to drive down Luna. They can, they may have, sorry, one moment. I've been working very hard today. I've been breathing powder. I've been shoveling soil, and I realize how hard it is to shovel. It's much harder to shovel crush and run gravel because you try to put your shovel and it just doesn't penetrate very far. Compacted crush and run is super hard to dig out with a shovel. So I ended up using my pickaxe. I'm currently burying the water line that I'm pulling toward my greenhouse for automated watering of the greenhouse. So I probably have some dust in the lungs. Tuttle Grimm says the powers that should not be don't like stable coins. No, they don't. Steven Robinson says, JF, yesterday Richard Hart says the CEO of Luna bought the top and that Michael Saylor will sell his leverage BTC if it hits $21,000. I don't know and don't care. I do not care. I think there's a future for BTC no matter what these people do. The CEO of Luna, I understand, has been buying Bitcoin, and it was to convince people that he was well equipped to back the functionality of his Luna blockchain. So basically, it was a way to back the Luna blockchain with more solidity. His problem is he bought Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin also fell in price. So I don't know if it was a super clever move, at least not short term, but perhaps long term, will see a recovery. As far as Michael Saylor, you can do whatever you want. Sell is leveraged BTC. As far as I know, Michael Saylor is just buying straight out BTC. He's buying actual hard wallet, you know, coins. So maybe he has some leveraged positions. I don't care. He can do whatever he wants, and it won't affect the price of Bitcoin long term. Long term, I'm expecting to sell my Bitcoin in the next bull run because I'm not satisfied with how low this one went. Yesterday in the private Patreon hangout, someone asked a question at the very end, and she's a woman, and I couldn't answer because I had already closed the show. But her name is Shell, and she said, next hangout, you can give me some ideas about encouraging my son to have babies. Very interesting question, because I've seen this so often. Women who have a child, a son, and they really don't know how to encourage them to have babies. And I've seen absolute desperation in front of them, in front of young men who are unable to be motivated to become, you know, reproductive adults. And this is very hard because really there's not much you can do. If there was anything to do, it would have had throughout their childhood. If you arrive and your son is 23 years old and he's a couch potato and he's spending his time on the computer toward unproductive endeavors and not interested at all in charming a female, there was probably something wrong from the beginning, and it's not like you can boost him at 23. At 23, he's already gone through his teenage hormonal years, and there's very little chance that you can, as a woman and as his mother, change his life, inspire him to anything. It's more in the way you would have trained him to care about the world as a child and in the early teenage years. So you need to have provided him with a male model, obviously his father. You have to make sure that his father during his childhood and teenage years makes him contact with his masculine abilities in terms of building stuff, in terms of working, in terms of developing a system of value. Now, there's nothing you can do once he's an adult other than just try to create conditions that will favor him to eventually find a job. And once he's got money and he has a self-worth, a conception of his own worth increases as he feels that he can accumulate money and have some success in business or professional stuff, then it's going to be easy for him to tempt his chance on the sexual market. But I would say in general, there's nothing you can say as a mother to an adult male. The adult males, at least the kind of adult male that I know and that I am, wouldn't be influenced by the counseling, the oral counseling of a mother. I remember everything that my mother was telling me. I would do the contrary or I wouldn't do it. So you have to be careful and mostly let him develop a self-drive so that he is himself sent toward the dating market. Now, another thing is with a son, don't desperate too quick, because never forget that if he's a couch potato at 23, he may be working things in his mind and eventually it might all bloom into something beautiful. I mean, there are years of my life where if you would have seen me, I was not productive, doing nothing, but the reality is I was working in my head and I was experimenting with computers, learning programming, and all of it seemed like very lazy stuff, but it was necessary ultimately to become who I became. So don't be too insistent on the everyday being productive. There are moments in a man's life where they totally lose sometimes years of their life. And it's okay. It's also what sometimes it's what's needed to eventually propel yourself forward. Don't be afraid of stagnation in a male, although in a female, because time is shorter, that may be more problematic. But with a son in the 20s, he's got a lot of time ahead, and what he thinks about and what he works on in his head may eventually bloom into someone of value that can then get into the reproductive lifestyle at 30, 35, even 40, some of them. So don't despair too much. Don't be too authoritarian. There's nothing you will say that will fix it. Just let it be and guide him toward productive endeavors if there's a chance, if there's an opportunity that shows that you know he would like. And most importantly, pair him with a male that can take him in the right direction, and that should be his father. Grapes Coda says, this is true. I was fairly stagnant at 22. I had a nightmare about my ex-girlfriend, and it woke me up to what I was supposed to be doing. Yeah, you know, don't be alarmed at all. For years, a man can be doing nothing. And suddenly he can catch up and suddenly throw himself into useful endeavors. So don't be too alarmed when you see this. And on top of it, it's like, the thing is, you can't help a male. A male has this stubborn behavioral basis that if you tell him something, it's not going to help. He's not going to do it. You may even send him the other way than the one you want to drive him. Let it be, says Jested. Thomas Howard says, for those who have lived through crashes in oil / natural gas production and recognize that all of them are the result of federal regulation, and despite this industry being better than pulling gold from the ground, the natural history / future of cryptocurrencies is easily predictable. There might be federal attacks on cryptocurrency. If that happens, there will be other cryptocurrency that will get better, like like Monero. Doctors Slam Levine's claim that all agree on gender affirming care, fear speaking out, definitely in hiding. Several medical professionals told Fox News their colleagues are afraid to challenge this narrative. So you have this federal comment that the only path for someone who has gender dysphoria is the path of gender switch and sexual surgery and gender affirming care. There are a lot of doctors who feel that this is incorrect in view of the current science, that it's an exaggeration and a morally chosen fact, that there are alternatives that have not been considered properly and they are being shut down. Not surprising. That's how the communists progress in our society, by imposing things and by excluding dissent and ridiculing dissent and sometimes depriving dissent of even an opportunity to speak or to have their points considered equally. Fractalman says USDT now showing some weakness too. I'm pretty confident in USDT. I think that if it was to show temporary weakness, it would probably eventually fix itself, but we'll see. I mean, nothing is out of the question. You never know. Sometimes some of the big really trustable assets in a crisis end up being those that are least backed and those that can't survive the crash. Just that says, beat you to it, Pineapple. Too bad JF didn't finish singing it. Well, I'm not gonna sing a full song. I'm exhausted today. I worked all day digging soil. All right, let's do our review of 2000 Mules, the documentary by Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh D'Souza is this weird, cheap filmmaker. He is one of the cheapest self-promoter maker of films of the modern times. His documentaries are Michael Moore wannabes of the conservative center right, but you have to give credit to the guy. This guy is able to sell a documentary that's probably produced with a budget that is 10 times lower than anything else comparable. Like, he produces at low budget, he produces low quality, but he succeeds at selling it, and very often on extremely favorable platforms. Like, this was sold on Locals and Rumble, so it's the home turf of the center right, the MAGA crowd, and it works. So you have to respect the guy to a certain extent, at least as a businessman who he self-promotes as this image of the immigrant who has totally endorsed the American flag and American values, and who's ultimately the best defender of it in the current world. So I don't like his documentaries generally. They are cheap. They are His thinking is often, just beside the track, just incomplete. The proofs are incomplete, and the cheap narration kind of voice where you see that he had his text written professionally, but that he sucks at narrating. I don't identify with the guy. He doesn't make me feel like what he's talking about is real. Very often he sounds like at the borderline of delusional, but always with it's hard to describe. You have to watch his movies to understand this thing, and particularly in 2000 Mules. The thing is, it's criticizable to a certain extent, and he got fact checked a lot. I think that the fact checks are exaggerated. I think he makes a better case than is being claimed in the fact checks. Because the fact checks, I've seen it published on Twitter and AP, Associated Press fact checks. Basically, it goes as follows. They say they have used a bad methodology. The methodology relies on cell phone tracking of anonymous data. So you can tell that someone has went to ballot boxes, but you can't tell that they have dropped ballots in the ballot boxes. So that's the weakness they claim. Now, the documentary actually goes further than this. You did not merely track cell phone data to establish that they were going to drop ballot boxes. So he ends up with a count of 2,000 people that he can identify making round trips basically between up to 30 ballot boxes in the city and then going to some non-profit associations of all kind, basically organization for the vote that pose as helping democracy, but that might have been involved in basically handing out mail ballots to these individuals who then the mules that he calls them. So the mules were carrying those ballots, and one by one, or three at a time, or five at a time, they just stuffed the ballot boxes so that it's not detectable, so that you don't see on the camera someone dumping a full truck of ballots. But it's probably what they think is happening is those are paid actors who were paid by the system for electoral fraud that was mounted by the Democrat through the mail-in voting. And because the mail-in voting is less secure, it allowed the Democrats to collect and harvest all those ballots, make sure that they were pro-Democrat, anti-Trump, and then drop them at the ballot boxes with their employees. The fact checks are incomplete here in claiming that the cell phone is the only methodology used. In this documentary, we see several signs that this was a professional operation. We see that they have a modus operandi, these mules, because we have them on camera. It's not just the cell phone, it's the camera also. Now, what does the camera catch? They don't have the cameras on every event because they know that the person may have gone to 34 ballot boxes. They don't necessarily have cameras on each of the ballot boxes. And very often, the mules were instructed to drop their ballots in ballot boxes where there were no cameras. So see, the state decides, I'm not going to put a camera there. And then the Democrats exploit this by having their professional guys drop in this specific ballot box because there's no camera. Now, there was clearly a modus operandi that was common to a lot of these mules. At some point, they started showing up with gloves. They were handling the ballots with gloves, like nitrile gloves, like you see in the emergency. And as soon as they had dropped the ballot, they got rid of the gloves in a close-by trash. Now, it seems that this has been caused by a recent finding that there had been someone caught out with their fingerprints doing electoral fraud. And that very day where it was publicized that they got caught, you see people changing their behavior and those mules starting to wear gloves. So that's another fact that you can't explain this as a problem of methodology. Clearly, the people who were dropping these ballots on camera were professional actors that had certain ways of operating that were common, because it's more than one. You can see at least two in the movie itself, and there may have been more that are doing exactly this. They're using gloves to hide their fingerprints, drop the ballot, and then get rid of the gloves. You also have, at the end of the movie, you have more than the little low-level guys who were dropping the ballots in the ballot box. You have someone who was apparently hired at one of the centers, distributing the ballots to the mules. And this person accepted to speak under anonymous cover to denunciate what she perceived, that she has been participating to a massive electoral fraud. She was saying that her job was to basically receive the ballots. So their agents were going out there, constraining people, extorting people, trying to say, oh yeah, vote for Biden. You want Trump out? Vote for Biden. Encouraging people like this, get their ballot. They were brought at a center, and the woman who speaks was the one responsible for receiving all these ballots, and most importantly, paying back the people who were bringing those ballots. So you have an entire network of collection of ballots and how to deposit them in an apparently legal but really illegal way into the ballot boxes. I consider that the case is solid enough, certainly, to be worried. I think it's a convincing case that there has been uncaught fraud that has been happening in the Trump Biden 2020 election. So the evaluation on the size of that fraud, I still don't have a major take, but it was so common that you can see familiar patterns across very different people. Like you have a woman, you have a man, they're in different parts of town, but they end up with the same strategy with the gloves to hide fingerprints. There was basically a central coordination of some degree, of some extent, that was major enough to see commonalities in the behavior of people. There are also weaknesses to the movie. You see in the movie, they've hired an actor and they're filming a kind of fiction scene where this guy is masked and he comes to drop ballots in a ballot box. It's very dangerous when you want to be seriously doing a journalistic thing, and you have very good camera footage that is very reveals a lot. It's very dangerous to mix this with fictive footage with actors because, I mean, at this point, you're accusing the other side of hiring actors that basically are playing the legitimate citizens, dropping ballots in the ballot box. But you're hiring actors also to play those scenes as you would want them to be seen, but you don't have them on camera. So very dangerous practice to make a claim about reality, but to mix it with fictitious footage. The whole 2,000 mule count. We haven't seen enough to know if this 2,000 mule count is accurate. Because here's the problem. They say we have certain criteria that we apply. 10 visits to 10 different ballot boxes or whatever is their condition. And then it leads to 2,000. But they show us only one full trajectory of someone who's been around town. Now, the one they show, it's absolutely clear to me that it must have been someone either was working on the ballot box surveillance system, or it was a ballot stuffer, because you see him really go around town and go in dead-end places just to go to the ballot box and then come back. So this cell phone tracking clearly was convincing. This guy has had something to do with so many ballot boxes, and he should be in a sane world, he would be interviewed by the police. What were you doing there? Did he have a legitimate purpose? It looks like ballot harvesting. That being said, we don't see 2,000. We don't see 2,000 traces like this. We see only one. So what about the 1,999 others? Are they as clean? Is it possible that they may have just encountered ballot boxes by random? That would be interesting to know. Of course, it's a documentary. I don't expect a full layout of the data set in a documentary, but I would expect more than one case. So those are the goods and bads in 2000 Mules. Like anything that Dinesh D'Souza does, it's incomplete, crappy, cheap, but it's better than CNN. So you can watch it if you want. It's better than a gray noise TV that does... Thomas Oward says, we can listen to JF for free if we want, but we do have the option of supporting his effort. I don't see much difference with D'Souza, unless D'Souza tries to get us jailed for watching without paying. That's one way to see. Shelburne says, I agree, JF, about the actor bit, and why did they not name the NGOs where the mules went? It is fact, name names. Yes, that was bizarre. I mean, if there's non-profits that are part of your methodology, we'd like to know what these non-profits are. Justet says, the critique of D'Souza JF gives says to me, waste of time. It's kind of a waste of time, because in the end, no matter how strong the demand, even if D'Souza's movie was a million times more convincing and would leave no doubt that there's a full conspiracy and would identify all of the names, still we would be stuck with the fact that no legal process has been started against these frauds that did happen. I mean, if they have the cell phone data, they have the cell phone ID, they should be able to, at least the police with a judge should be able to recover the identity of these people who have been those mules. And so there are certainly a couple of them that fit the bill for a criminal prosecution. Biden disinformation czar demands power to edit other people's tweet. Well, she didn't say really edit, but she wants verified people to be able to add context to other tweets.
I'm eligible for it because I'm verified, but there are a lot of people who shouldn't be verified who aren't, you know, legit, in my opinion.
This is the new disinformation czar of Biden, and she wants the verified badge to be a badge of leftist status. and mainstream journalism status, and I'm a trustable voice status. I hope that she gets served what she deserves by Elon Musk, and I hope that Elon Musk makes the blue check mark a public good available to anyone who confirms their identity.
I mean, they are real people, but they're not trustworthy. Anyway, so verified people can essentially start to edit Twitter the same sort of way that Wikipedia is, so they can add context to certain tweets. So just as an easy example, not from any political standpoint, if President Trump were still on Twitter and tweeted a claim about voter fraud, someone could add context from one of the 60 lawsuits that went through the court, or something that an election official in one of the states said, perhaps your own Secretary of State and his news conferences.
Basically, she wants replies. That's a reply. You can add all the context you want to any tweet already, but she wants this rep she wants her replies to be put at the top of other replies. People like me who are not verified, the lowest of the lowest who are not trustable. She wants basically Twitter to choose the winners of the social media game and set the winners to be always the state and always the mainstream media. Hopefully she never gets what she wants and Elon Musk comes in as a super Chad and totally reverts anything that they would have done in that direction. Nicholas Petris says masks over video calls. Yeah, you know you're at the peak of the misinformation movement. The fact checkers, when they are wearing the mask for the Zoom call just for the purpose of displaying the wearing of the mask to make promotion of it, you know that you're at a high level. Putin's current dilemma was JFK's worst fear. Reflecting on the Cuban Missile Crisis, President John Kennedy once warned that nuclear powers must avert those confrontations which bring an adversary to a choice of either a humiliating retreat or a nuclear war. The war in Ukraine has been calm. Ukraine has obtained $40 billion from the Congress. Things seems to be stable there, not much progression. I don't know what's the plan of Putin going forward, but it's relatively stalled as a progressive war. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the Odyssey Super Chat option. Odyssey is my favorite platform for super chats. You can use the dollar button right below the regular chat, or as an alternative, there's a link to Entropy in the description that is also a valid way to support the show. Ukraine turns off Europe bond gas. Kiev cites force majeure to halt a third of Russian transited gas flow to Europe, while Gazprom says there have been no issues that would justify the move. Russian gas conglomerate Gazprom has received no confirmation of force majeure or any obstacle to continued transit of gas through a junction in Lugansk region, the company said on Tuesday. So, gas transit services of Ukraine declared force majeure. So normally in a contract, you always have these obligations on both party, but you often have a clause that says, in case of force majeure, it's okay if you don't respect your commitments. And Ukraine here is claiming that the war itself and the presence of the Russian forces in Ukraine is a force majeure case. It's a good argument. Ultimately, though, what they're doing is they're strategically blocking the flow of gas in a way that will hurt Europe and in a way that they think will hurt Russia. One moment. Interesting strategy. I was surprised actually that gas was continuing to transit through Ukraine. it was very surprising to me because here you have two countries at war, but somehow they're able to agree that this pipeline is something we don't touch. So I'm not surprised. I was actually surprised that it lasted that long without this pipeline being blocked. And we're starting to see the beginning of this strategy here. Is it a legitimate force majeure case to be in a war? Well, it's definitely one of the gravest thing you can be in. So I guess in a court, they would probably win, but it's not something that will be settled in court. It's it's really war strategies, and anything goes in war. Russian captured Ukrainian territories will soon ask to join Russia, state media. Russia's state-run RIA Novosti news agency is reporting for the first time Wednesday that the Russian military occupied southern Ukrainian city of Kherson will soon petition the Kremlin to become part of the Russian Federation. We had seen developments in line with this, but now it's confirmed on the Russian side. John Drake says Russia can sell all the petroleum products they have to China, India, and the rest of Asia. Yes, which is why ultimately the big hurt on this will merely be Europe. It will be Europe, and probably the way Ukraine looks at it is they were getting some payments, I believe, from this flow of gas, because the deal was that they could take a certain... They were getting up to hundreds of millions of dollars per year for this transit to happen in their country. What they're probably thinking at this point is, hey, money is not our problem. We can get infinite amount of money from the American Congress, and there's no sign that it's going to stop. The Americans keep signing again and again laws that just send these massive amounts of money to Ukraine. So they don't need payments, but if they can strategically do something that they think will hurt Russia, or perhaps even more cynically, that they think will hurt European countries, then they'll do it. It's an interesting take. Psaki seems to have misspoken or something. She says, I know there is an outrage right now about the protests that have been in relation to the abortion Roe v. Wade question.
So I know that there's an outrage right now, I guess, about protests that have been peaceful to date, and we certainly continue to encourage that outside of judges' homes, and that's the president's position.
We continue to encourage that outside of judges' homes, and that's the president's position. Was this edited, or did she say it in that order?
I know that there's an outrage right now, I guess, about protests that have been peaceful to date, and we certainly continue to encourage that outside of judges' homes, and that's the president's position. So
I don't know if this was edited in, but it's kind of confused. I know what she meant. She probably meant that they encourage that the protests are peaceful, but it may have looked like to some people that she was encouraging that the protests are in front of judges' homes. There goes the housing market. Since the Fed is rushing to hike the US into a deep recession just so inflation will supposedly slide ahead of the November midterms in line with Biden's demands, the housing market is eager to comply with Powell and Biden's handlers' wishes, and is leading the charge into the economic abyss. Affordability indexed. Record plunge in affordability. Yes, it's we are in a crisis, and I hope that you have set everything you need to survive, because there's not going to be much ways to make money, and there's not going to be much ways to afford stuff, because stuff will be at extremely high price, and it will get worse before it gets better. European sanctions blown to bits. Draghi says most gas importers have opened ruble accounts with Gazprom. So the vast majority of the European countries have accepted the terms of Moscow and are now trading in ruble. And we have seen basically a complete recovery of the ruble. That's an inverted curve, because it's the value of the USD with respect to the ruble, and there was a crash and eventually it recovered. So very clever from Vladimir Putin here to have fixed his two of his problems in with one stone. On the one hand, there was these threats to the exports of Russia, and on the other hand, there was an attack on the ruble and the ability of Russia to pay. So he took the two together and he said, let's fix it by demanding gas for rubles. And it worked. Gordon Johnson, Tesla's April sales in China implode, fall 98% sequentially, despite Musk's comments to the contrary. Wow, I didn't know that it was that bad. Johnson takes exception with the media, who in his opinion seem to be making excuses for Tesla's minus 98% sequential decline in April sales. That is a massive decline. So it seems that Tesla is losing the Chinese market. Eventually, what I think will happen is Tesla will lose all markets because it's just overpriced. Regular car manufacturers have found ways to make electric cars for more cheap, much more cheap than Tesla does. So what's the interest of having a Tesla? It looks good. It looks good with your liberal friends, I know. But other than this, New York judge lifts civil contempt finding against Trump and orders him to pay $110,000 in fines. It seems that the judge and the Trump team have found an arrangement because he was found in contempt and there was a fine that was adding every day until he would accept to give some documents. Now the judge has accepted conditionally to stop this rolling fee. He will have to pay $110,000 and he will have to commit for a deposition on the question of post-its. So there, this has been in the news for, I think, since 2017. The whole idea that Trump is working with post-its and the judge is unhappy with the documents that were turned to him because there are no post-its. The thing with post-its is that sometimes, you know, they don't stick for so long. They disappear. Sometimes they slip out. Sometimes they get removed. And I don't know what the judge is convinced that there are some post-it that were on the documents that would represent orders from Trump and that they've been removed. So we're going to have Trump under oath, probably stating something like, oh no, I don't know that there were post-it on this sheet. And oh no, I don't know that there were any post-its on this sheet. Will it lead to anything? I think that these are political persecutions anyway. And it's not a particularly interesting case. I talked about it at the beginning of the show, but I hadn't shown this news item. I lost my life savings. Terra Luna cryptocurrency collapses 98% overnight. Terra, which ranked among the top 10 most valuable cryptocurrencies, dropped below $1, having peaked close to $120 last month. The dramatic crash meant its market cap dropped from above $40 billion to just $500 million, resulting in unprecedented losses for investors. Another wrote that they had lost $15,000 after failing to sell their holdings for a substantial profit when it was trading above $100 last month. Yes, you have to take your profits at some point. It may be less true with something like BTC, where there will always be brighter days ahead for BTC, probably for decades still. But especially with these alternative crypto, if you're doing good, you have to get away with the money. And a last news item before I take a break, and I will be back at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Modern Day Debate for this capitalism versus communism debate. Judge says he will block Florida governor Ron DeSantis redistricting map as unconstitutional. Plan disperses black voters. Okay. I understand. I guess his argument will be on a 14th Amendment basis. But is there a right to be coalesced by race in America for the purpose of redistricting? I don't know. But it seems like it's problematic that if you are part of a minority, ultimately you have more rights as it relates to how you will be considered in a pool, basically. And that pool must be collectivized by the state. It's a very interesting case if it gets to the Supreme Court, because I'd like to know, you know, the Supreme Court has shown itself open to pursue a right-wing policy on Roe v. Wade. But are they also willing to question equality in America and how there's so much racial stuff that has been poured into it? Is there such a thing as a right for black people to coalesce, to be coalesced by the redistricting considerations of a governor? I don't know. It's an open question to me. I don't really care about the outcome. I will point out that this country is held together because of redistricting, because of basically of the fact that we are not a full democracy. Because if we were a full democracy, it would be Democrat every year, all the time. There wouldn't be no such thing as a Republican Party. So it's a good thing that power is divided not only on the number of heads in this country, but on considerations around territory and property, and, you know, these people who are these places who are low density populated, which are often end up Republican, they have more power than if you were to divide power in the US by head count. And that's a good thing. John Drake says, that's why it's a republic. If you can defend it, sir.